Hello, everyone, and welcome to this, the inaugural episode of the Big Ten Outlook podcast with myself, Dash Tischler, alongside me, Daniel Sarver, and certainly with the holiday break just coming to a close for college basketball and bowl game season very much underway for college football, there are a lot of Big Ten teams who've been in action in recent days and will be in action in the days to come. At the moment, for college basketball, there are 8 different Big Ten teams ranked across the men's and women's AP Top 25 polls, and we'll be talking to you about 2 of those teams tonight. We'll also be talking to you about the Big Ten football bowl games, which have already come, and those which are going to happen, culminating, of course, in the 2 college football playoff semifinals. And certainly, when you consider all these games and all these teams, there's a lot to talk about in the world of the Big Ten. And why not start with these ranked basketball teams, which at the moment, there are 2 who stand out from the crowd, one on the men's side, one on the women's side, with these being Ohio State's women's basketball team and Purdue's men's basketball team. And Daniel, what's your thought on this Ohio State team so far?
Yeah, so coming into the season, there's a lot of expectations for this Ohio State team. They are the reigning Big Ten champions, so there's that. They were ranked number 14 coming into the season, so there's a lot of pressure with that. And we knew that they had a lot of good players, but since then, they've really lived up to expectations nicely, and they've risen to number 3 overall in the rankings, the highest ranked Big Ten team at the moment. Coming off of a Sweet 16 loss, they were hungry, and they've shown so far that they have the talent to back it up. Leading the team, of course, is senior guard Taylor Mikesell. She led them last year with a 47.5 three-point percentage, and she's really been the leader of this team so far, really leading them through the scoring and just through her veteran leadership. But besides her, they've really struggled with some injuries to some of their other key players, especially at the guard position. Just recently, they were dealt a blow when guard Madison Green went down with a knee injury that puts her out for the season. And on top of that, they also recently have had an injury to guard J.C. Sheldon, who is maybe their second best player, honestly, after Mikesell. She suffered a lower leg injury that started as day-to-day but is now a week-to-week ailment. So Sheldon will be back, but she's currently out. But despite that, they've managed to have a really strong start to this season. They started out the season with a really impressive win over Tennessee. You know, anytime you beat Tennessee in women's basketball, that's a good victory. And since then, they've backed it up with some other really good results. They beat Louisville. They have had some nice Big Ten wins against Rutgers, Michigan State, and most recently yesterday against Northwestern. And on top of that, they had maybe their most impressive win recently on December 21st when they knocked off number 17 Oregon 84-67. That was a really impressive win for them and quite possibly leading them at the moment, maybe a little bit surprisingly. I mean, we knew coming into this season that she was going to be a very good player for them, but people didn't know she would progress to this point so quickly is freshman forward Cody McMahon, who has really somewhat led them so far with her energy and her intensity. She, in their most recent game against Northwestern, she led all scorers on the night with 24 points. And this is now the 4th time in the last 6 games that she has led the Buckeyes in scoring. And after the most recent game, she made this comment. She said, "For me, it was kind of a confidence thing too. It was more so understanding the game of college basketball. And I feel like from now to the beginning of the season, I definitely understand basketball a little bit more." So this just kind of shows you how she's just learning the game so quickly at the top level here. She began the season with 7 total assists in the first 7 games of the season. And in the most recent game, she had 3 assists. So that shows that she's also starting to distribute the ball a little bit better. And she's also been really strong for them defensively. So helping her out has been forward Rebecca Mikolasikova, who has really been a strong player for them down low. She's averaging 8 more minutes per game this season than last season, which just shows you the jump that she's made and her ability as a player. And she's also had some help down low from forward Ebony Walker, who her stats don't necessarily jump out on the score sheet to you, but she's giving them some really important minutes. Her 19 minutes is the most played in Scarlet for a game against a Power 5 conference school in the most recent game against Northwestern. And she's really made some impact plays both offensively and defensively. And then a player that's been helping them out in the scoring department is Taylor Teary, who's really, really been helping them out with her scoring. She once again hit double digits in their most recent game against Northwestern, and she's also been their leader in terms of rebounding. She's got 82 rebounds this year, which leads the team so far. And then because of all these injuries to the guard position, they've had to have other players step up and sort of lead them from the guard position. And that player for them has been Ricky Harris, who's sort of taken over the point guard spot with the injuries to Mason Green and JC Sheldon. Harris also took over because last year Madison Green also suffered a season-ending injury, and Harris took over that spot last year and really played well for them. And once again this year, she's doing the same thing. In their big win against Oregon, she had 8 assists, and in the most recent game, she had 6 assists. So she's really finding her teammates in good positions to score and just doing a good job with that, really helping put Mike Sell and McMahon in good positions to score. And so, obviously, the injuries are going to be a tough thing for them to deal with, but right now, Ohio State just looks like a really quality team, and they're going to be tough for any team in the Big Ten to try to challenge for that Big Ten title.
Certainly. And then moving on to the men's side, where at the moment, Purdue is ranked number one in the nation. But this is a team for whom not all is necessarily quite as well as the box score, or at least those rankings as well, would show. And despite the fact that they have Zach Edey, who is an amazing player and arguably the best college basketball player in the nation right now, this team is not in perfect shape. They've actually not been shooting too well from three-point land, which, considering their history, in which they've actually been quite good from three in recent years, is a little bit surprising. But entering tonight's game against Florida A&M, they were only shooting 31.1% from three, which obviously is not a great result. I don't think that there's any team in the country who would like to be shooting 31.1% from three, for sure. And then tonight, they also did not have a great three-point shooting game against a 2-9 Florida A&M team, in which they actually only shot 24% from three-pointers. So even lower than their average so far this season. But of course, this is a team who is ranked number one in the country. They are still undefeated. And in Zach Edey, they have an amazing player. And really, even beyond him, this is a solid team. You don't get to being number one in the country just by having one elite player. That's just not simply the way that this works. And you can maybe even make the case that they actually can get better given their three-point shooting struggles. So for sure, this is a team where we may not even be seeing them at the best that they'll be this season at this moment, which if that does end up being the case, that would certainly be a scary thought for a lot of other teams in the nation and not just teams in the Big Ten. Going to be a fascinating team to watch. Can they keep up their high-flying start, and can they make it even more high-flying with shooting more threes, or will the fact that they've not been shooting too well, not shooting more threes, but making more of them, and will that maybe propel them higher up, or will they start to struggle more as perhaps their poor shooting from three catches up to them? And will other teams find ways to stop Zach Edey? So they'll certainly be a fascinating team to watch, but they're not the only fascinating team to watch in the Big Ten, because there are going to be some really fascinating college football bowl games coming up as well. And actually, there's already been two which have happened, with Wisconsin beating Oklahoma State and then Minnesota beating Syracuse. And Daniel, what were your thoughts on these two games?
So watching the Wisconsin against Oklahoma State game, that was a little bit of a unique game, seeing as both teams had quite a few players transferring out before the game. So both teams looked a little bit different than they did in the regular season. Both teams' quarterbacks transferred out before the game, so we got to see some different guys under center for them. But I think it was a really good win for Wisconsin to get them to a winning record, which I think is really important for them. With Coach Luke Fickell coming in, a new coach, starting a new era for them, it's really good to get off with a winning record, and just that'll hopefully help bring in some new recruits. Fickell was actually on the sideline for the game, which I thought was really cool. And I just think that he'll be able to use this to bring in some more recruits. In the passing game for them, Chase Wolf started at quarterback, and he had a really solid game. He was 16 of 26 for 116 yards with a touchdown. And then, as always for them, the rushing game was key. Braylon Allen had 22 carries for 116 yards and a touchdown, which is what really propelled them to victory here. And then on the Oklahoma State side of things, their quarterback that started this game, Garrett Rangel, he struggled a little bit. He was 14 of 31 with two picks, so a little bit of a rough game for him. But looking into the future, there could be exciting things ahead for both teams. Oklahoma State obviously lost Spencer Sanders, which was a huge loss, but they've been looking at Brennan Armstrong in the transfer portal, which could be a really exciting pickup for them. He was most recently with UVA, and he didn't have the best year this year, but he just has a lot of talent, and he could really help out this team. And apparently he's also reportedly been looking at Wisconsin, potentially going there. So again, if they get him, then that could really propel the Luke Fickell era into a great start. So what did you feel about the other game? What did you see from that one?
So it was certainly an interesting one. Minnesota got to a 9-win season again, which now seems perhaps a little bit par for the course for them. You sort of get the feeling that this is what to expect for that team. And they actually took a 14-0 lead in this game, which solid start for them. But then Syracuse came back and started to make it close. Thankfully for Minnesota, however, they were able to get a 70-yard pick six in the third quarter. And that really helped them to this win, which in the end, it was only 28-20. So not especially lopsided game by any stretch of the imagination. And they also had to ride out through an Ethan Kaliakmanis injury, which forced them to bring on Tanner Morgan. And thankfully, the veteran delivered for them and helped them to close out this game. So certainly a solid win for Minnesota. Not a game that necessarily they were heavily favored or seen as being a heavy underdog in, but they took care of business, and that's what they will have wanted. The question for them moving forward now is what's next? I mean, they're losing Muhammad Ibrahim on offense, which certainly he was really crucial to them this season. You kind of have to wonder whether they'll be able to recreate the sort of success they were able to have on the ground this season. And also, it'll just be interesting to see what now do they do, because this is a team who feels is stuck a little bit in the neutral of being a good team, who are seen as being contenders for the Big Ten West, but haven't actually been able to win it. So this next season, certainly, they'll be looking to better their 9-win season and hopefully for them make a challenge for the Big Ten West crown and maybe also a more high-profile bowl game, but certainly solid for Minnesota. And it was certainly a successful couple of games for the Big Ten with both teams winning so far. And now looking forward to the upcoming bowls, of course, tomorrow we have the Maryland versus NC State game. And Daniel, what are your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, so this is a chance for Maryland to get a really good win for their program going up against a ranked number 23 NC State team. I think that, you know, there could be a lot of hope here if they get a win for the future. Talia Tagovailoa will be playing in this game. So what do you expect to see from him in this game, Dash?
I mean, I expect him to have a solid game. He's been solid all season, and certainly there's no reason to expect him to stop being solid now. I do think, though, that one of the storylines for this Maryland team so far this year is that, honestly, their passing game was not actually as good as I expected coming in, especially with the receivers they had. Like, I would have thought they would have done way better than they've done so far. Certainly, entering the season, I also had the feeling that they might be sort of an old school, or not even really old school, but like more of a 2017 Big 12 type team, where it was like you'd see all these super high scoring games and like quarterbacks like Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph slinging it around. And I would have thought that Talia would have had a season like that given his options. He had Rakim Jarrett, he had Dante Demas, Jayshon Jones, and Jacob Copeland as well. And that didn't really pan out for them. So now it'll be an interesting game for sure to see what happens. Speaking of quarterbacks who transferred out, NC State have also lost a quarterback transfer in Devin Leary, who was really a great player for them, but they've been able to keep on going without him this season. He's been injured. And it'll be interesting to see how this game goes for sure.
Yeah, I felt that was a really disappointing loss for them to lose Leary. I thought that before the loss to Leary, they were looking really strong, and then obviously still, you know, finish out the season at 8-4, ranked number 23. But it's just a season of what could have been for, you know, a really talented Wolfpack team. Another key storyline to this game is the opt-outs. You know, Maryland has had a lot of opt-outs for this game, especially at the receiver position. Rakim Jarrett, Dante Demas, and Jacob Copeland all opting out. So how do you think this will affect the game?
You know, they still have weapons. I mean, like I said earlier, the receiving core entering the season was so talented. I thought they'd be outstanding. And you take those three guys away, obviously it hurts a lot. But there's still Jayshon Jones. And I still think that also Corey Deitches, the tight end, was outstanding for them this season. Maybe he won't be able to be as effective now because he won't have CJ Dupree, another transfer, to really take some of the load off of him. But I think that certainly there will still be chances to get the ball to those guys. And at the same time, well, there'll be a less deep receiver room. You'd expect Talia, with the quality of quarterback he is, to be able to just find some other guys for a few plays. And with the running game they have, you think that that would take some pressure off of him. And his scrambling ability should be able to do that as well. So I certainly think that Maryland, certainly they're not as strong offensively as you would like to see them being in terms of personnel entering this game. But at the same time, I think that they're a team who they'll have enough guys to make the big plays they need to make. And they have enough talent that if Dan Enos can call a good game, they should be able to find some success.
And then also just sort of looking forward to the future, you know, you've been following this Terrapin team for a long time. And if they win this game, they would have their first 8-win season since 2010. And they would also secure their first back-to-back bowl victories for the first time since the 2002-2003 season. So can you just talk a little bit about what this would mean for the program to get this win?
I think it would be big, honestly. I mean, this is a region where people are not super passionate about college football. And this is another thing about the game. It's in Charlotte, and that will certainly favor NC State, who will be in their own backyard. I don't expect Maryland fans to travel especially well. But I mean, like, in terms of generating interest, two back-to-back bowl game seasons with bowl game wins would be a good sign for this Maryland program. 8 wins would be a nice step in the right direction. And I think that this season maybe – I feel like there's been a sense of disappointment around it, but in truth, an eight win season, if you told that to Maryland fans coming into the season, I think they would have been happy with that. And so this would certainly be a nice step to show that they're solidifying themselves as a solid team in the Big Ten who can maybe even go even farther, because we've seen like they've got talented players, and Coach Loxie's done a good job bringing in some other talented players. And even like this season, the defense, which was so maligned, took what I thought was a fairly sizable step forward. So there's certainly a lot to look forward to for the future here for this Maryland team. And a bowl game win would be a nice way to send the season off on a high note.
Yeah, and then looking forward to some of the other Big Ten bowl games, there is the bowl game coming up pretty soon, the Music City Bowl, with Iowa facing off against Kentucky. So what do you look for in this game?
I mean, in this one, I'm just going to be fascinated to see how Iowa responds. This is a team who we both thought that they would be the winners of the Big Ten West entering that last game of the season against Nebraska. And shocker, Nebraska managed to hold on in a game against a Big Ten opponent who you knew they had the talent to match up with, but the question was just, can they finish? And they finished off Iowa. And this was an Iowa team who had a terrible offense all season. And I'll be honest, one of the most shocking transfers I've seen so far was Cade McNamara going to Iowa, because I have no clue how any quarterback in the nation wants to go to Iowa right now, unless you're like transferring from like an FCS school or like a school where literally you're not doing very well and Iowa was the only offer you got, because that offense's development has not been good. Their defense is, as always, outstanding. You would expect their defense to be solid against Kentucky. And I think at this point, it's really just a question of how do they respond to the disappointment of having squandered a chance to win the Big Ten West at home against a Nebraska team who had talent and had fight, but were really struggling to finish games.
Yeah, and then another key component to that game, obviously, is the fact that Will Levis opted out of it for Kentucky. He's going to enter the NFL draft. So just real quickly, what do you see from him for his future in the NFL? Do you feel that he'll be successful in the NFL? Or,
I mean, I'm not as high on him as some people are. Like, he played in a pro-style offenses, and he had decent stats, but like at the same time, the team wasn't overwhelmingly successful. I feel like they could have been better than they were. And in truth, I think he's good, but I don't know that he's like an elite quarterback prospect. You know, like if you saw how he'd done and it wasn't in offenses that would translate well to the NFL, I feel like he wouldn't be so highly rated. And I'll also say, just talking about their offense and their offensive stars, they will also be missing Chris Rodriguez, who's been a great running back for them over the last couple of seasons in this bowl game. And so I will say this game might not be one to watch if you like offense. I had the feeling that this could be very low scoring indeed, with Iowa's vaunted defense going up against a Kentucky offense missing arguably its two best players. And then, of course, Iowa's offense having its own notable history of struggles. But yeah, I think that Levis is a guy who he's solid, but he's, I don't know, he could be a really good NFL quarterback, but I'm not entirely sold yet. But what's your take on him?
Yeah. I mean, I would echo a lot of the same things that you said. I think he's a really solid player. I feel like he actually has a really high downside, you know. He has a really high floor to where you've seen what he can do in college. You know, he's shown the ability to be consistent, but can he be an elite player in the NFL? You know, can he can he have the intangibles and just the star power that you need from a quarterback in the NFL? You know, I'm not really sure. But looking forward to some of the other bowl games. And another interesting bowl game involving a Big Ten team is the ReliaQuest Bowl, which was formerly the Outback Bowl. And this matchup features an Illinois team that both of us were really surprised by how they played this season. We both thought that they had a really solid season in the Big Ten this year, one of their best in recent years. And they're facing off against a Mississippi State team that just recently lost their head coach. So
yeah, certainly quite tragic with Mike Leach, one of the most beloved figures in the game, and rest in peace and power to him. But certainly an interesting game. And one of the surprising things about this one is that really it could go any number of ways, I feel like, you know, because Illinois is going to be missing Chase Brown, their star running back, who will not be playing in this game. And Mississippi State, meanwhile, will probably be somewhat shaken up, you would expect, by Leach's unfortunate passing. And at this point in time, this is a game where it's two solid teams. Mississippi State certainly had a solid season. They're ranked right now. Illinois, of course, like you said, also had a solid season. And I'll be fascinated to see what the outcome is here, because it's not quite the storyline that you might expect, where a lot of people might be thinking, oh, Mississippi State, Illinois, offense versus defense, who wins? But the truth is, Mississippi State's offense was actually not that good. They were only 62nd in the nation this year, despite the presence of quarterback Will Rogers, who is quite highly regarded. So that will certainly be a fascinating thing to watch, is how does that offense perform, especially without Leach? And then for Illinois, how does theirs perform without their star running back, you know?
Yeah, and then also with Illinois, they lose their defensive coordinator, Ryan Walters. Purdue has hired him as their next head coach. So what's your take on that hire? How do you think that'll affect this bowl game? And how do you think that'll affect Purdue?
You know, I think certainly for the bowl game, it could affect how the players prepare to quite an extent. You would hope that there will be defensive game planning continuity and like they'll be prepared in spite of. And actually, I'm not sure if Walters will be on the sideline for them in this game. I haven't seen anything about that. So that's certainly something else that could really impact their preparations. But it's certainly something that could have a big impact for them. For Purdue, I thought it was, I don't know, it's an interesting hire. It's Walters is a young guy. He obviously did a great job with Illinois' defense, so there's certainly potential for it to go very well. But I felt like maybe there were better options on the market, you know? Like, I feel like, I mean, maybe you could have, I don't know if he would have wanted to go, but maybe you could have made an approach to say like a Jeff Traylor at University of Texas, San Antonio, certainly he's had a ton of success with them in recent years. Like that's a guy who you could have gone for, who's had some of that experience. I think Walters was a good pick, but I wonder why they didn't go for a more experienced name, you know, especially given that they were losing a guy in Jeff Brohm who'd done a ton for that team.
Yeah, so recently Purdue has really kind of been defined by their offensive style. So I think this will definitely take them in another direction. I think that, honestly, I thought that Walters did a really good job with the defense at Illinois. He got them to lead the nation this year in scoring defense, allowing only 12.3 points per game. And they were number second in total defense, with allowing only 263.8 yards per game. So if you look at the stats, they really had a solid year. But yeah, like you said, maybe they could have found a better option. So you mentioned it on Will Rogers, but how do you think he will affect this game? You know, obviously he can, you know, really provide a lot of star power at times. So do you think he'll be the edge that Mississippi State needs to win this game?
I think he can certainly bring it. You know, I think he's a really good quarterback. And I think that maybe this season didn't quite live up to what it could have been for Mississippi State, but I think it was still a solid season for them, you know? I think that he's a guy who certainly is a difference maker for this team. I think he'll definitely be crucial for them. If they win this game, it'll be in part, I think, because he has a good game, and I would expect him to have a good game and to keep them at least competitive, you know? So yeah, I do think he's a difference maker for them, because especially with Illinois missing Chase Brown, they're going to be more reliant on their passing game. And that'll mean that like it could come down to a duel of which quarterback is more effective.
And speaking of Purdue, they've also got a big matchup coming up in the Citrus Bowl. They'll be facing off against an LSU team that until very recently, right up until their last game of the regular season, really, looked into position to possibly make the college football playoffs. So what's your thoughts about this game, Dash?
I mean, this one's going to be actually a really good game, I think. these are two teams who are both in their respective conference championships. Obviously, LSU are the favorites right now, and Purdue certainly in an interesting position after losing Jeff Brohm, who, like I said, had done a lot for this team and this program, and I think kind of left a rather unfortunate time for them. So this could be a game where they implode without their coach, but at the same time, I think it'll be really interesting to see what happens. And these are two quality teams, although they are missing players in this game.
Yeah, kind of going off of that, the Boilermakers will be without their starting quarterback, their top wide receiver, and they'll have an interim head coach at the helm. So could you see this turning into a blowout? I mean, the Tigers are currently favored by 14.5 points. So what's your take?
Yeah, I don't think it will be a blowout. I think that Purdue is the sort of team who can really hang with other teams, and I don't expect them to win it at this point, and it could certainly disintegrate for them, but I do think that this is going to be a game where they'll be able to at least hang in there and put up a fight. I mean, LSU is also missing players as well, with Kayshon Boutte and Ali Gay missing for them.
Yeah, we'll give LSU fans the chance to evaluate freshman Quincy Wiggins, who's an elite prospect, you know, coming out of high school. He's young, and he looks like he has a lot of talent. So look out for that in the game. Also, coming into this season, a lot of people, like even from the offseason, based on some stuff he did in the offseason, and then also just based on early on in the season, a lot of people are kind of hating on Brian Kelly. They didn't think that he was the man for the LSU job. They didn't think he was doing a good job. So, but he's kind of turned it around here recently. So what's your take on Brian Kelly's time at LSU so far?
I've been surprised by how good it's been. I mean, I did not expect him to be in the SEC title game his first year. I thought that they would struggle. I didn't think that they'd be terrible, but I thought that they'd be poor by SEC standards. And they were great. I mean, beating Alabama was an amazing result for them. And beyond that, just getting to the title game, amazing for them. And even there, like, they lost by 20, but at the same time, they were able to put 30 points up against a Georgia team who are quite good. And so I think that this season was almost as good as it possibly could have been for this team. I mean, really, just absolutely amazing. And kudos to Brian Kelly, who, I'll be honest, I was doubting him coming into this job. Like, after he showed up at the basketball game and was talking in a fake Southern accent, I was like, does this guy, like, get what he's walking into? Like, why would he fake an accent at your first public appearance? It seems sort of like even he didn't believe in his ability to show up and be himself. But instead, he's done a great job.
Yeah, and then just one other sort of interesting thing about this game, Drew Brees, who of course was, you know, really a great quarterback for Purdue, one of the best in their history, from a school that has surprisingly produced quite a few quarterback greats. He will be serving as an interim assistant coach for both the bowl preparation and for Monday's matchup. So kind of a great little story there. What do you think about Drew Brees coming back to help out?
I think it's awesome. I think it's also cool because it'll be, I mean, literally you could say that this is the Drew Brees Bowl, you know, like, it's Purdue versus LSU, who maybe he didn't go there, but he was a massive figure for the Saints, who are of course Louisiana's NFL team. And so, yeah, I think it's cool to see. I'll be interested to see how it goes for him, and who knows, maybe he'll be a guy who we watch on some college football team's coaching staff in a full-time job very soon.
Yeah. I mean, he tried out broadcasting for a while. It didn't really work out, so he's looking for something now. So, yeah, I think looking into the future, you know, who knows? I mean, obviously, he's got a great football mind. We know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see. And one more fascinating storyline, what promises to be a really interesting game.
Yeah, and then another game that perennially features Big Ten teams, it's a looks to be a great game again this year, is, of course, the Rose Bowl game, which this year is really a fascinating matchup, Penn State against Utah. So what's your take?
Oh man, this one's going to be interesting, because for me coming into the season, I thought that Penn State were the team who had the potential to really implode of the big names in the Big Ten. And instead it was Michigan State who did that. And Penn State, I mean, okay, their recruiting entering the season was great, and that was a sign that all was better in the program than I anticipated, but they were quite good. Like, the Ohio State game was a big loss for them, but the scoreline actually did not reflect how close of a game it was until late. Michigan game for them was a disappointment, but this is a solid team. But in truth, if you ask me, they should be nervous about this Utah team. Kyle Whittingham has a great record of preparing his teams to play well in bowl games, and they just came off of an absolute destruction against USC, in which I don't think anyone expected them to win by that much. And I even thought that they were the underdogs going into that game. So this is a team who seems to be peaking at exactly the right time, the way they have in years past. And at this point, arguably the most remarkable thing about their season is that they somehow lost to Florida. So I think that Utah is a great team, and it'll be a tough game for Penn State.
Yeah, I mean, Penn State really finished out the season well. They had some really impressive victories. I mean, they just absolutely stomped Maryland, and they had some other just really big wins. I mean, they beat Michigan State by a lot, which would maybe be expected, but I mean, they still had to go out and do it. They beat Rutgers by a lot. And so, you know, obviously leading the way for them is Sean Clifford. So what do you look to see from him in this game?
I mean, I look for him to be mistake-free. Against Utah, you can't really give them the ball because it's a team who, in a game like this, probably your best bet is just try to play mistake-free football, not give them chances to beat you. And I think that, like, Clifford certainly is a guy who can be inconsistent, and I wouldn't be stunned if he made a couple of turnover-worthy plays. But I think if he can just keep the ball out of their hands and keep Penn State's offense moving forward, that'll be what he's going to have to do, because we play against a really good football team, and you can't make mistakes against them and give them chances to beat you.
Yeah, and then on the other side, Cameron Rising, you know, coming into this year, a lot of people had a lot of expectations for him as the quarterback of Utah. So what'd you see from him this year, and what do you expect to see from him in the bowl game?
You know, I feel like Rising flew a little bit under the radar in terms of the national conversation of, like, quarterbacks who are elite. Honestly, he was not a guy who made a ton of waves nationally, but I still think he's a solid player for sure. And I think that he's a guy who, if he just needs to keep doing his job for this Utah team in this game, because in my opinion, I think that, like, they don't need him to be special to beat Penn State, but they need him to be good. And thankfully for them, he's a good football player, and I would expect him to show up and do his job. And this is a Utah team that I think, just in general, I expect them to show up and do their jobs in this game, because that's the sort of team that they were against USC. And in that game, they were spectacular. In this game, they don't even need to be at that level to beat Penn State. They just need to be good.
Yeah, and then another big storyline of the season for Penn State was their defense. Their defense was actually quite strong, led by the ousted Miami head coach, Manny Diaz. They were ranked inside the top 10 in yards allowed per rush and scoring. They only allowed 18 points per game. So do you think they'll be able to handle this Utah offense?
I mean, I think they certainly can. For example, they did really well against Ohio State for most of that game. And Ohio State's offense, I think most people would say, is better than Utah's. But at the same time, I mean, Utah is still a quality football team. And we talked about Cameron Rising. He's a really good player. And this is certainly, you don't get to the level they've gotten to without being able to find offensive success against good defenses, you know? And I think that, like, they can certainly find success, but I would say that Penn State's defense will be, I think they could certainly have a good game and keep Penn State in that game and maybe even bring them the win, because they're, as much as I've been talking about Utah, like, I do think that Penn State is a solid team and they can win this game too.
Yeah, and then obviously coming off the Rose Bowl last year where they had a really tough loss, you know, Utah is going to be looking to get a big win here. They're going to be looking to maybe get a little bit of revenge after losing to a Big Ten team last year. So just talk a little bit about what a Rose Bowl win would mean for this Utah Utes program.
I mean, I think it would mean a lot. This is a team who literally only within my lifetime, they were in the Mountain West Football Conference. And, like, this is a team who they've come to the Pac-12, and they've become one of the top programs in the Pac-12. And maybe they don't have the swagger of, say, a USC or an Oregon, but at this point in time, I think you'd be hard-pressed to say that they aren't a contender for the title of the top program in the Pac-12. And, oh, by the way, the Pac-12 seems to be getting a lot more respect even this year than it did in years past, which, I mean, the fact that Oregon was able to hang around the top 10 for so long after that opening loss to Georgia showed that maybe national voters are starting to change their minds about the Pac-12. And that's the case, this is a great chance for Utah to show that they will not go away, even if USC and Oregon are flashier and will get more attention. They're a team who in the future can maybe be a consistent national power. I think that as long as Kyle Whittingham is there, they totally have that potential. They're a great program, and a win here would be a massive statement for them. I think also, though, like, this is a team who maybe they'll even feel a tiny bit disappointed in the back of their minds about what the season could have been. Because, I mean, Daniel, looking back at that Florida game, I feel like that's a game that they really should have won. And how would you evaluate this season for them, even if they win this game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, after last year, watching them in that bowl game against Ohio State, I was thoroughly impressed with the team. I thought they were a really good team with a lot of talent. And I thought coming into this year, they had a chance to be one of the top teams in the country. I was thinking potential playoffs. And so losing to Florida and the way that they did, I felt that that was a really disappointing game. You know, obviously, I've been really critical of Florida this year and of their quarterback, Anthony Richardson. I think that at times they can flash a lot of talent, but I just don't think they're that good of a football team. And then also to lose to a UCLA team, which, while good, isn't, I wouldn't put them up there in the top of the Pac-12 with the Oregons, with the USCs. And so I think those were just two disappointing losses that ultimately kept them out of the playoffs this year. But I mean, still to beat USC twice and to win the Pac-12 is a still a really big season for this team. You know, it was sort of a parting shot, honestly, at USC, as USC is about to leave the Pac-12 and go to the Big Ten very soon here. I thought that they really almost sort of asserted their dominance and sort of showed USC like, hey, USC, you're not with the elites in college football just yet. You know, obviously, as you've seen, I've been kind of critical of some of these teams like the USCs, the Texases, leaving and going to conferences with more money and sort of leaving behind these teams that honestly, I think are just as good as them, if not better a lot of times. I mean, you see TCU becoming the first team from Texas to make the playoffs this year. Just that, you know, these teams like USC, they're just chasing the money, leaving these other teams and conferences with less money that could ultimately hurt them down the road. So I would say all in all, still a really successful season. And, you know, if they get the win in this Rose Bowl game, especially, it'll be really satisfying for Utes fans.
Yeah, for sure. And I will say that, like, when we've talked about USC and them leaving, I talked about how USC is currently a bigger brand than Utah, but in 2024, they'll be gone. And then it'll really be, I think, really at that point, a win here would show that it won't just be the Oregon show once USC leaves. It'll be the Utah and Oregon show. And by the way, there's other teams in this conference as well, like Oregon State, who just absolutely demolished Florida, who I think are really teams to watch in the future. And it seems like the Pac-12 this year started to get a little bit more respect nationally. And hopefully that continues, because there are some awesome teams in this conference and also some great coaching staffs, such as Kyle Whittingham's at Utah, which I think will continue to keep these teams nationally relevant in the coming years.
Yeah, I mean, I think teams like that in the Pac-12, and then also some of the teams in the Big 12 recently that have had a lot of success, like the Baylors this season, the TCUs, Texas Tech really looks like they could be on the up and up. I think that these teams are really important for keeping the balance of power in college football and ensuring that they're still somewhat of a Power Five and not just, you know, two conferences where all of the good teams are and all the power resides, you know, in the SEC and the Big Ten after some of these bigger names move to those two conferences. And then I think also you look the ACC, obviously there's Clemson, but there's other teams in there, I think, that could also do the same thing for the ACC. You know, we talked about NC State, there's the Wake Forests, Duke and UNC have looked good in recent years. So, or I mean, Duke, at least this year. In recent years, they haven't been great, but Duke looked really good this year. So, I mean, I think college football is still in good hands. I think there's been a lot of talk about these two super conferences, but I think you can't ignore the other conferences. And I hope that college football doesn't ignore the other conferences when it comes to the playoff conversation as well, even when the bigger brands move to the SEC and the Big Ten.
Certainly. Yeah, and it'll be fascinating to see how this college football landscape continues to shift in the coming years. But I think that this year has shown that it's too early to count out conferences like the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and even the ACC. But of course, as we've been talking about these Big 12 teams, including TCU, we'd be remiss if we didn't close out this episode by talking about arguably the two biggest Big 10 games of this week, which will be the Fiesta Bowl featuring TCU versus Michigan and the Peach Bowl featuring Ohio State versus Georgia. And starting with the Fiesta Bowl, Daniel, what's your take on this game?
Yeah, so obviously one of the big storylines coming into this game is the TCU offense. They've had one of the best and one of the most explosive offenses in the country so far this year. And, you know, they were a really surprising team coming into this season. You know, people didn't expect this team to make it to the playoffs. I actually saw something recently that said that coming into this year, Nebraska actually had better odds in Vegas to make the playoffs than TCU. So the fact that they're here is really astonishing. Yeah, but what got them here ultimately was their explosive offense, of course, led at quarterback by Max Duggan. Max Duggan's a great story. You know, coming into this year, he wasn't even the starting quarterback. He'd been replaced at quarterback, but then an injury allowed him to take over once again, and he's just been excellent since he's taken over. He's 12th in the country and passes behind the line of scrimmage, and he's just really put up really solid numbers that allowed him to finish second in the Heisman voting, which, you know, is really huge for a TCU player. And part of his success has been because of the great talent around him, including Quentin Johnston, who is probably the best receiver in the country. His breakout 22 season has vaulted him up the NFL draft boards. I've seen a lot of mock drafts with him potentially going even in the top 10, and most agree that he should be the first receiver taken. He's just had a really, really solid year. His 6'4 frame just gives Duggan such a reliable target to hit those deep passes on down the field. And once again, he's going to be huge in this game. And then another key for them is going to be having that balance with running the ball. And they've got a really good running back this year with Kendra Miller, who has really been solid for them on the ground. You know, he gives them a physical gear in the run game. He's here to pound between the tackles. You know, he's 26% of his 1,331 yard total rushing output has come in the gap between the center and the right guard, which shows you that he's just not a guy that's going to bounce it outside all the time. He's not afraid to just pound it down the middle. So I think that will be a huge key. But what's your take on how this Michigan defense, which has also been really great this year, can slow down the TCU offense, Dash?
I think really the key for Michigan, like you said, that running literally down the middle is so crucial for TCU. For Michigan, if they can stop that, that'll be a massive help for them. Because when you consider how they play, they've got an amazing interior defensive line when it comes to run stopping. And literally, it's the unstoppable force meets the immovable object. The TCU running game down the middle is outstanding. The Michigan interior run defense is outstanding. Which one wins? That'll go so far to determining who wins this game. Because the truth is, TCU's passing attack is great. And it's not even just Quentin Johnston and Max Duggan. They also have some other really solid receivers who maybe don't get the same respect or name recognition, but who've also been really good for them this year. Like, he has a bunch of options, and he's also a great scrambler. But at the same time, TCU would not be where they are without their run game. And their passing, their O-line is not great in pass protection. It's fine, but it's not amazing. But they've really been able to protect that run game down the middle. And if Michigan's defense, which is outstanding at stopping that, those sorts of runs, can stop that, suddenly they can force TCU to become a lot more one-dimensional. If they get stopped there, their running game suddenly takes a dive. Duggan's a good scrambler, but if they can key in on the passing game, that will help them so much to prepare to stop those receivers and limit TCU. And also, TCU has actually given up a lot of pressure. So if Michigan can continue to get pressure against them in this game, throughout the game, regardless of what happens with the running game, that'll also be a crucial key. So I do think that this Michigan defense will have an outsized role to play in determining the trajectory of this game, because if they play at their best, it will be really hard for TCU to beat them. And TCU's offense is its calling card. Its defense is solid, but its offense is certainly its strength. And if they can get stopped by this Michigan defense, it'll become much tougher for TCU to pull off the victory.
Yeah, and then for Michigan on the offensive end, coming into that Big Ten championship game, both of us felt that they were somewhat lacking on that end of the field, especially with Heisman candidate Blake Corum going down with that injury that really limited him and now has pretty much put him out for the season. So we both felt that gave the edge to Ohio State, you know, going into that late season matchup. But since then, some players have really stepped up for them. Donovan Edwards has really become a key player for them in the running game. And then JJ McCarthy, who has been much maligned, and we both sort of hated on him a little bit going into that Ohio State matchup, he has really stepped up lately. So what do you think they need to do to break down this TCU defense?
I think they just need to keep on doing what they've been doing. Like, their offense has actually been surprisingly successful this season. And yeah, I've not been the biggest JJ McCarthy fan, but you know what? You look at the stats and ultimately they're putting up points. And that's really all they've got to do, because TCU's defense is solid, but it's not outstanding. And they really just need to keep doing what they've been doing. the loss of Corum, I would have thought would have hurt them way worse than it has, but it hasn't seemed to really do that. And so I think that for them, the key now is just continuity. Don't let the big moment get to you. And also, if they can control the ball and control the time of possession, that'll be so big in this game. Because I think that in a game like this, when TCU's offense is as good as it is, and it's going to be so important for Michigan's defense to really get stops on them, the more time you can keep your defense on the sideline, keep them resting, keep TCU's offense off the field, that's so crucial. And if Michigan can just control the clock, run the ball, break TCU's defense's will, that's what they got to do. Like if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm telling my assistants, establish the run early no matter what you do. Like just establish the run, let McCarthy get his spots because TCU has to key in on the run and control the clock. But I mean, Daniel, what's your take on this TCU defense and what they have to do to stop this Michigan offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously stopping the run game is going to be the key to stopping the Michigan offense. That's really the heart of this team on the offensive end. So I think if they can stop the run game, that'll definitely give them a chance. I think ultimately TCU's offense is good enough to keep them in this game. I think that they'll score enough points to keep them in this game. And really what TCU is going to need to do is stop the Michigan run game enough to force Michigan to throw the ball in key moments, not just allow Michigan to just run out the clock and just, you know, run the game away, but stop them enough to force them to throw in the key moments. And then it'll really just come down to whether JJ McCarthy can establish a connection with some of these talented wideouts that he has, like Ronnie Bell, Cornelius Johnson, or their tight end Luke Schoonmaker, who's really been key, I think, for them in a lot of their games so far this year. And I think if they can do that, then ultimately I see Michigan winning a close one here, because I think JJ McCarthy will step up in these big moments and make the plays that they need. But I think that it'll be a really close game, maybe closer than a lot of people are expecting. But what's your take on the game, Dash? What's your prediction?
You know, I feel like it will be close, but I feel like it will never be. I feel like it'll be one of those games where it stays close, but it never gets quite to the point where it's really on a knife's edge. Like, I think that at this point in time, Michigan have the easier path to victory because their defense and offense can both win the game for them. And they really need both units to show up. But even if, say, their defense has an off day, their offense will still be able to go with TCU's, I think. If their defense has a good day, it will take a Herculean effort from TCU's defense to stop their offense and really keep that game a winnable one for them. And so I do think that it will be Michigan in the end. I think TCU's had an awesome season. They've been a really good team. I think that their story's been great for college football in general. And also, they've earned it. Like, they've won a bunch of games where they've had to pull it out at the very end. And they've not gotten here just through an easy schedule. They've gotten here by pulling out the tough wins, by playing good football. But I do think that this is going to be where it all comes to an end for them. I think Michigan will win.
Yeah, and then obviously in the other semifinal, we've got another Big Ten team, two Big Ten teams in the playoffs this year. In the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, we see Georgia face up against Ohio State. And a lot of people have been picking Georgia as heavy favorites in this one. So what's your take on this? Do you think Georgia will run away with this game? And what do you think Ohio State has to do to keep this game close?
Okay, so I don't think that Georgia will run away with it, but I think they're going to win pretty comfortably in the end. Like, this is an Ohio State team who seems to have a knack for making games look better than they actually were, with the exception maybe of the Northwestern game and the Michigan game. But like, this team, I mean, I think the CJ Stroud is overrated. I think that he plays in a system which is good for quarterbacks. Like, Ryan Day is good at getting quarterbacks to succeed. He has amazing weapons. And when I watched him play this season, which admittedly I didn't watch him a ton, but I watched the Ohio State versus Maryland game, in which a Maryland defense, which is not outstanding, gave him serious trouble when he had bad field position to start. And Georgia's defense, okay, they're not as good as last year's defense. They're still a really good defense. And I think that this is a team who, I mean, they held Tennessee to, what was it, 13 points, I think, if I remember correctly, in that game. Like, and that was a great offense. That was a better offense than Ohio State's, in my opinion. And I think that this is a team who, they're kind of lucky to be here at this point in time. Other teams didn't take care of business, and they walked into the playoff. But I think that for them, the way they have to keep it close is really just through their playmakers. Like, they have so many guys who can make a big play on that team and so much talent. They just have to let that talent keep them in the game. Like, against Penn State earlier in the season, that talent was what made that game as much of a big margin of victory as it was, which, I mean, it wasn't a blowout, but it was still solid. And they just got to have, they got to have a performance sort of like the end of that game where it was like everyone was making a big play for them. But beyond that, I think Georgia's just the better football team here.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Johnston for TCU, but I think maybe the one receiver in the country that can maybe rival him is Marvin Harrison Jr. He's been so key for Ohio State. Even at that Maryland game that you mentioned, he really made some key catches for them. So what do you think he'll be able to do in this game against a really, really tough Georgia defense?
I think he'll be able to find success because he's a great receiver. I don't know that he'll have a monster game, but I think that he'll have a big game. I think that C.J. Stroud will probably try to get him the ball a ton just to establish that rhythm and to really rely on the guy. And so I do think that, yeah, I think he'll get the ball a lot. And I think he won't be maybe as efficient as he's been in other games or like as successful, but I do think he'll have a good game. But I mean, what's your take on how he'll do? And what's your take on this Ohio State offense against this Georgia defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'll find some success. He's a really talented receiver. And even though Georgia would be paying a lot of attention to him, I don't think Georgia can commit to just stopping him too much because Ohio State has so many other playmakers. I think that one thing for Ohio State is they have a really talented offense, but as we saw against a Maryland defense that really isn't that great, they can struggle at times. So, you know, they're really going to have to be locked in to turn in a good performance here. And I think ultimately what's given them the success that they have had in a lot of the games, including that Maryland game, has been their running game. And they have kind of a big loss. Travion Henderson will not play due to a foot injury. So what's your take on this running game and how do you think they'll be able to do against this Georgia defense?
I mean, yeah, like you mentioned in that Maryland game, they were what sealed the deal. Losing Travion Henderson is going to hurt. And honestly, if I'm in Georgia's staff in the planning meetings on defense, I'm saying, let's dare Ohio State to beat us with the run game. And worst case scenario, they have some big drives where they're able to find success, but we know that our defense can beat them. And I think, honestly, if I'm Georgia, I just try to take away the pass and force Ohio State to play on the ground because they're good there. But Georgia's defense is also going to give them trouble there too, I think. I mean, it's really, Georgia had the luxury of knowing that Ohio State have a ton of talent, but that they can hang with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the one good thing for Ohio State is that their running back, Mayan Williams, will return to practice after dealing with an illness this week. And he will also play. So that's a good thing for them, I think. You know, he will definitely help them out in the running game. But I think, like you said, he's not what Travion Henderson is. So, and especially not having the pairing of the two of them will limit them somewhat. So they're really going to be needing to be locked in. And especially, I think, in the passing game, because they're still going to have to pass the ball a whole lot, I think, to win this game. And C.J. Stroud is really going to have to be locked in the passing game and look to not make any mistakes, because in the past, he's been really, really good in his time at Ohio State. But one of his weaknesses, I think, is he has at times made some mistakes with some interceptions and just some costly mistakes in big moments. So he's really going to have to watch that. But yeah, on the other side of the field, we see an Ohio State defense that really might be their weakest defense in a long time. They've come under a lot of fire recently just for some not great performances. I mean, even like against Maryland, in that game against Maryland, they didn't look great. And also in the game against Michigan, it really looked like they got exposed. So what do you need to see from that Ohio State defense in this game?
They need to make big plays like they did in that Penn State game. They also need to be able to get stops on the ground because Georgia has a great run game. And if they get that going, they're going to be able to control the clock and keep Ohio State's offense off the field. Ohio State's offense is going to be what's going to win them the game if they can win the game. And if they can keep Ohio State's offense off the field, keep their defense rested, sort of like what Michigan needs to do against TCU, that will help them to just really make the game so much easier for themselves. So for Ohio State, the converse of that is that they have to stop the run game and not let Georgia control the clock, not let them control time of possession, not let them control the tempo of the game. That's going to be so crucial for them. Like, if they can get those stops on the ground, that'll be great. And it'll also force Stetson Bennett to make big plays. And I ultimately think he's a solid quarterback. I think he probably gets a little bit more disrespect than he deserves. But I do think it's safe to say that, like, maybe forcing him to beat them is their best hope in this game. But what's your take on that battle?
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely agree with you that is their best bet, because Georgia, I think, honestly, has had a really underrated offense this year. All the talk so far this year has been about their defense, but their offense has also been really, really good. They've had a really deep and effective running back rotation, mixing in Kenny McIntosh, Dijon Edwards, and Kendall Milton, that's allowed them to just constantly throw out different looks and fresh bodies, and it's generated 207 yards per game, which is really, really solid. On the other end, the Buckeyes allow just 3.4 yards per carry. So I think if there is a strength to their defense, it is stopping the run game. I mean, I think we saw that in the game against Maryland. Coming into the game, you know, you and me thought that maybe Roman Hemby would be the key for Maryland if they were going to win, you know, running through that Ohio State defense, and that just didn't happen. So I think that would be the key, but I think you can't look past Stephson Bennett's talent. I mean, I think that he's had a really good year maybe in a different year with some of the other guys around the country not doing what they did. I think Stephson Bennett would potentially be in the Heisman conversation with the year that he's had. And he's got some really talented weapons to get the ball to. None more talented than the 6'4 tight end, Brock Bowers, who's averaging 55.8 yards per game. He's been described as an almost unguardable player. You know, he's, in my opinion, the top tight end in the country. Last year, as a freshman, he was just the key to their offense. Every single time that they needed to make a play, it seemed like they threw the ball to him. And I just don't see how Ohio State is going to stop him. But what's your take?
I mean, yeah, Brock Bowers is amazing. That guy is a great player. And stopping him, if Ohio State can stop him, that would be a massive help for them in this game. I agree with you. I think Bennett's solid. I do think, though, that if they can force him to be the instrument of Georgia's victory and force Georgia to try to beat them through the air, that will help, at least in the sense that it won't take as much time off the clock. And if Ohio State, they just need to have their offense on the field as much as possible. Their defense, they need to just keep their defense rested, need to keep them from being burned by Georgia's ground game. They need to keep themselves in control of the clock. I mean, really, in games like this, clock control is so crucial, and who's controlling the tempo. And I think that really their defense just needs to get the stops early and get them quickly. I think that Georgia's offense, like we've talked about, they have a great ground game. They have a solid quarterback. And certainly just for Ohio State, they've got to get stops. And if they can get a few big plays like they got in the Penn State game, even if they don't get stops on a couple of crucial drives, forcing a turnover would be so big for them, even like one or two, because in games like this, a play like that can make such a big difference in momentum. It gives you an extra chance to get the ball on offense. Maybe you even return the ball if it's, say, a fumble recovery or an interception. And really, it's just going to be about making big plays and getting the stops on the ground, which, I mean, I know that sounds so basic, but it's going to be crucial for Ohio State in this game because their defense really needs to have a massive game.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, with all that said, though, I think in the end, we have to remember that this Georgia offense is still very, very good. I mean, they ranked in the top 10 in total offense. Their 491.9 yards per game were actually only one spot behind Ohio State. So I think ultimately, in the end, their offenses are almost comparable, whereas the Georgia defense is clearly superior to the Ohio State offense. So I think what we'll see happen is the Georgia offense will get the better of the Ohio State defense. They'll throw for quite a few yards. Maybe Ohio State can stop them a little bit in the running game, but I think Georgia will make up for that in the passing game with their surprisingly good passing game. And then I think on the other end, they'll be able to hold the Ohio State team a little bit, you know, missing Travion Henderson. They'll be able to stop that run game enough. They'll be able to limit Stroud enough in the passing game. And I think if Georgia can get some takeaways, which I think they will, I think they could pick off Stroud. I think they could punch the ball out potentially from, you know, some of these guys like Marvin Harrison Jr. that, I mean, he's played all year. He's played really well, but still somewhat inexperienced compared to some of the Georgia players. You know, I think they could get some fumbles from them. And I think in the end, Georgia will end up winning this game pretty comfortably. But what's your prediction?
I agree with you. I think it'll be a comfortable win for Georgia. I mean, for Ohio State to win, so much has to go right. And this is a really good Georgia team. Like, I don't see them faltering at any facet of the game, which would let Ohio State claim the victory. I think their ground game will have just enough success to allow Stetson Bennett to really start picking his shots. And if they can just take more pressure off of him, he can really carve up Ohio State. I think Ohio State's defense is going to put up a valiant effort. I don't think it'll be a bloodbath, but I don't think it'll be pretty either. And I think that Ohio State will make enough big plays to keep the game at least respectable, but I don't think it's going to be a game which they ever really seriously seem like they're going to win it. I think in the end, it'll be a comfortable Georgia win, and we'll have a Georgia versus Michigan matchup in the final, which, by the way, would be a rematch of last year's college football playoff semifinal matchup between the two. And I think that'd be a great game, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think, that would be interesting to see again. I mean, obviously, Georgia got the better of them last year, so we would have to see if Michigan maybe comes out, plays with an edge, and, you know, maybe can pull off a shocker. But I think ultimately, regardless of what happens, we can definitely say that it was definitely a very successful season for the Big Ten, getting two teams in the playoffs for the first time in the conference's history. I think it's a big deal. I think that it proves that despite maybe not having the deepest conference this year, they still had a very successful conference. And yeah, I mean, what's your take on the Big Ten as a whole this year?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I don't know that it was the deepest it's ever been. I mean, the Big Ten West was not amazing this season. And even in the East, like beyond the top three teams, Maryland was solid, but the bottom three were not that good. But in the end, yeah, I think two teams in the playoff is a great result for the Big Ten. I think that in the end, this is going to be a season which, regardless of how it ends up, unless both teams totally embarrass themselves in the college football playoff semifinal, it'll be seen as a successful one for Big Ten football.
Yeah, and then in the future, with USC joining the conference pretty soon, I think you can, again, look to see multiple teams in the playoffs. I think with the playoffs soon extending to 12 teams, you could potentially be looking at, a USC, Ohio State, and Michigan all making the playoffs. So I think the future is definitely very bright for the Big Ten.
And even, like, say, a Penn State, or even if they can get it turned around, Wisconsin or Nebraska could be up there too. And even schools like UCLA or in the far future, if they get it right, potentially even an Iowa or Maryland could be the sort of team who could crash that party if things progress for them and they reach a higher level. But of course, that just shows just how deep of a conference it really is in terms of programs, even if the season was not the deepest in terms of results.
Yeah, so I would say stay tuned, because there's more to come from the Big Ten. And, you know, we could even see an all Big Ten national championship this year. So exciting times ahead for the Big Ten.
Certainly. And thank you for listening. This has been Big Ten Outlook. Once again, with myself, Dash Tischler, alongside me, Daniel Starver. And goodbye for now.